So we were talking about the pillar, the poles, the pillars, and then the way the women actually work together as an ensemble. Now, let's talk about the male characters. We have Maye Okwuadi, who comes in at a point in time with the intent of killing Inuloye.
Mm-hmm.
But she finds a way of turning the table in a way. Should we say, in spite of the adversity, we still have some women that had the capacity to manage the... if you look at Inuloye in relation to Irelu, how are you able to, you know, delineate those two characters?
Yes. I think that if you remember too, you recall that that Inuloye is supposed to be a foreigner in Owu. Mm-hmm. She's a foreigner in Owu, and she's actually the cause of the war.
The Elin.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So personally, I was not surprised that Inuloye still have that type, that amount, that reservoir of feminine energy to convince Okwuadi, okay, to think and act otherwise. She's a prototype, okay, Elin. Okay, she's a prototype. Okay, feminine fatale. Okay, in the play, you know. But what that also sparks off also is the fact that the potential of Inuloye, in terms of her own peculiar area of strength, also then brings up the potential, even more profoundly, okay, the potential of the Irelu Afin. And it was as a result of the role of Inuloye that Irelu Afin was able to even assert her role more and her wisdom more, okay, or Maye Okwuadi, in spite of the fact that he's a warrior. So at that particular moment, okay, Maye Okwuadi became more or less like a son, you know, who does not have as much wisdom as Irelu Afin waxes in the play. And he actually sees himself, okay, he could see through his own foolishness, but he's just too weak, okay, to resist Inuloye. It's too weak to resist Inuloye. But you may also say that particular occasion is also for Okwuadi, okay, to get back what belongs to her to him, okay, because somebody came and took your wife, okay. Now you are back. So what that means is that it's making us to realize, okay, how ordinary, how almost insignificant the reasons for war, you know, have always been down the line of history.
Now let's look at it even from another part. Is that supposed to be a kind of a statement about contemporary leadership, about leaders being, in spite of the way the media present them as very important, very big men, is that a statement about how fickle they are?
Oh, they are fickle minded. There's a talk about a former military head of state in this country, okay, whose stay that long in office as a military dictator, okay, was sustained by his wife. And even at the point when the man was tired of the entire thing and he felt like stepping and aside, that as some people who witnessed who were around, you know, there are ways of which it was said that the wife warned him not to step aside, that he should stay on in power. And when the man then decided to stay out of power by going on to the television, when he stepped out of the studio, he was slapped terribly by his wife. He was dealt with dirty slaps.
Is it possible for us to draw a kind of connection between Maye Okunade in the context of this play and Macbeth? Manipulation of a very powerful person.
Yeah, it may look like manipulation, okay? Mm. But then even if we have to read it as manipulation, you would also realize that manipulation fundamentally, elementally, has to be there because we are from there. We lived in their womb for 9 months. Before they then gave birth to us.
Now,
and so that link,
Maye Okunade was one of the army generals that actually inflicted that carnage on
Owoya. Yeah,
and up until the time that he shows up in the play, the impression the women have given the audience about him is one daredevil, very powerful, very well. Should we be surprised when he comes in and he becomes otherwise?
Yes, the audience were surprised from their reaction. They were surprised. Some saw it as comic in a way. When he came down, they saw it as being coming. But then what I really wanted people to understand was the fact that great men do have the tendency also to fall.
That was
a symbolic fall.
Yes, I was going to talk about symbols.
Of Maye Okunade.
I was going to talk about now, you have these pillars. And he comes in, like you said, at the beginning of the play.
Yeah.
Leading the soldiers, dancing, their war, and demonstrating
the way they cut off the heads.
Isn't that symbolic of his own execution?
Of his own,
way.
Yeah, because this did not occur to me then. But then now that you are bringing it up, it could be read, as an instance of his own beheading. It could be read, really. It could be understood, really, as an instance of his own beheading. Okay, because it means that at that particular point in time, because you see, a woman, disappointed you, ditched you by taken to another man and followed another man to his kingdom.
And because of that, you started a war.
And then you started a war as a result of that. And then you then come, swearing that you are going to kill the woman and blah, blah, blah. And then the moment you see the woman, everything melts. Now, it means that even as a warrior, you would not have been able to sustain the temerity which being a general actually demands. Even ordinarily, as a warrior, you would not have been able to sustain it.
Now, let's not look at him in the context. So it means that, in spite of everything, if we look at Maye Okunade and we look at Ireluafin, so it means in spite of the adversity, the women
Ireluafin is stronger. Those women are stronger. They are stronger. And even if you then also then take into consideration the end ritual, end of the play, the coming of Anubua and the reenactment, and of course there was a prophecy of doom from Father Doom on which I read as an apocalyptic kind of a proclamation, but the spiritual resilience of the women, and how the women were able to exude especially when they fall into trance, it's beautiful, it's so meaningful. And then what I did was that the coming of Anubua, Okay, when and
why the ancestor?
Yes,
the ancestor.
Okay, so when he comes as an ancestor, he doesn't come ordinarily as the Anlubua who appeared unto the women
at the beginning of the play.
Mm. Now he comes, okay, as a masquerade.
Now, good. I was going to go to that point because Ochovison mentioned that yesterday.
Okay.
There was no masquerade in that
play. In the play.
And I had it in mind that we are going to dwell a little bit on.
Okay.
Because that itself is a very huge symbol that Choyinka has actually used many times. Yeah. And this project we are doing, like the concept note that you read, Choyinka actually featured prominently in it in terms of his conceptualization of an African tragedy.
Yes.
Now, let's look at it. When Alubua come in the first time that we meet him as the ancestor, obviously he used music.
Yeah.
Now, when he's coming back as a mask, music, but I would imagine different type of music.
Yeah.
Let's look at those two music. What the choice of music did in the first one and the choice of music did in the second one. First, in relation to this person we encounter as an ancestor, and then we see him again, the symbolic ancestral position as a mask. Mm-hmm. So let's look at those.
In the first instance, he comes as a personification of history, as a historian. Okay.
So how was he dressed? Historian,
eh?
How was he dressed?
He comes. You know that also. He is also. He's a deified ancestor.
Okay.
You know, he was a king. He was a king of. He was a leader of Owu, and then became deified, and then becomes an ancestor, and so on and so forth.
Okay.
And so, he comes like a human being, an ancestor. But then, who even deceived the women? Those two women by the river. Okay, as an ordinary human being, until he then tells them that I'm Anlubua. Okay, and so that's when they then realize, this is the ancestor Anlubua, and then runs home, to the other women to tell
them
that we have seen him. The Anlubua, the ancestor, blah blah blah, and so on and so forth. But then on his second return,
no, let's talk about the first. So he's dressed in what form? As an ordinary
white, white, where combining the idea of him being a man. And now a deity, you know, another white, Kebuba, and Inshoro, and Danshiki, okay,
white.
And then
the
white, and then Ishaki,
the second time he comes as an ancestor,
and when he then comes as an ancestor, he's to come and proclaim doom. Even further doom on the land. So I then worked on the concept of ancestral worship in Yoruba culture. Okay, and the ultimate that anybody can find anywhere is the Egungun, culture. So I went for
the costume, and then we created
a beautiful mask for that. Okay, and so he comes as an ancestor, and then with the movement, and it was a very solemn environment anyway. And so then talking about music, and so music here, will definitely change in tempo, and what
so it becomes slower,
it conveys,
deeper.
I think that's a scene where they're singing where they live.
Let me look for a copy of the thing where we are married. I should be able to. That's where they're singing where they live.
Where they live.
And of course,
No,
but isn't that ironic? Anytime a Lise, when it is Jew, that's supposed to be kind of soothing, calm.
Yeah.
But then Anlubua comes to pronounce more.
Iri here is a metaphor.
Okay, so it's not even in the context of the normal Iri.
Iri here is a metaphor of the tears of the women of the land. And just as it deals, as yes, that's also tears flow from the eye socket when you are in the process of lamentation. And so, and the song, that I think that's even the most prevalent dirge throughout the entire play, because all the playwright kept on inserting it at particular point in time. You know, whenever the women go into a process of lamentation or they need to express some major sadness and so on, you can where liri say where liri
shewele lu. You see, this thing you just mentioned now reminds me of another character in the play, Gesinde.
Yeah,
that's the Jebus soldier that's always sent in.
Yes,
now there's a point that Gesinde also laments the fact of his involvement in the is that suggestive of the fact that even those who perpetrate evils are also damaged, you know, war and carnage violence are also damaged by it? Is that
there, the point? There,
how did you realize that point?
Where there,
Gesinde comes in for it. There's a particular one where he had to describe the way he smashed that
baby against
the tree. Yeah. How did you work that out, and what was the effect on the audience?
Yeah, there is a way. I did not play that in the full glare of the audience.
Okay,
it was reported. Why? It was reported.
Why? Of course, the playwright also reported.
It was reported by the parents, and so I did not bother to. But then the character who played Gesinde was asked to be very, very graphic in his description of his action of killing the baby. Also coupled with the fact that that baby boy, before he got seized
from the mother,
from the mother by the soldiers, okay, was the only hope left, okay, of a male component of the community. And so when somebody then goes and returns to come and say that I will smash this head against blah 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 blah, and then brings the baby,
the corpse,
for them to, I played seriously on the emotional capital of that particular beat. I played heavily on the emotional. I tried as much as possible to elicit the highest emotional capital that one can get, okay, from that particular. And so in terms of response, okay, and so again you find the entire, all the women now representing the entire community, you know, now responding as a chorus. Now responding. And then the way I treat these things is also that not all lines need, not all lines are, allotted to a single character needs be rendered by that character. I can distribute.
Why did you have to do that?
Oh, yes. It's also in this type of performative context, trying to seek harmony, and then unite, and then building the ensemble in a particularly structural format, okay, to reflect that again the community is one, okay, in that particular state of jeopardy that it is one. So why you treat even some of the lines of many such lines had to be treated in that way.
Okay, yeah. So what the writer had written first, you look at it.
I redistributed the lines. Okay. I reallotted the lines, and so you have a situation whereby there are collective speakership. There is collective speakership of a particular line, sentence or line that's been given
to
a particular character in the play, okay, and I can reallocate okay, or redistribute, okay, some lines also across the number of women, okay, so that I can then I can use that occasion to link them up, okay, and make the not just the line, okay, but the lamentation, and then it also helps the flow, a more fluid flow, okay, of the poetry, you know, of the play. Then there is also a way in which now you see talking about poetry of the play, okay, that's poetry at the verbal level, but there is also poetry at the visual level.
And what was that?
Okay, now the poetry at the visual level, okay, was established through movement, okay, and this movement cannot be separated from the verbal rendition of lines, so they have a way of working together, and of course you have more than enough songs
that have been written into
the text that one can work on, okay, to achieve that.
You know, before we started the interview, we were having that discussion about Soyinka's A Dance of the Forest that you directed and to celebrate Soyinka's 80th birthday.
Yeah,
and you know that very awesome assemblage of mastery. And you know, today you just made me to realize that there were 80 masquerades representing each year
of Soyinka.
Did you use similar approach in your direction of Women of Owu in terms of the number, or is it just a facade, or there's a specific number of women that you have? What was the symbolism of the number of women that you
have? I have always been fascinated. I'm a scholar of mythology, and so I have always been fascinated by the symbolism of numbers. So I'm always fascinated by that. And the one thing that I could recall that we tried to do was to erect the standing poles of seven.
Seven.
Yes, seven.
Why seven?
Seven is a magic number. It's a magic number of Ogun. Okay? Yes.
Seven is a number of Ogun.
It's a magic number.
Ogun is the god of war.
He's a god of war and the implements of war. Okay? But there is also a way by which Ogun sustains, get it destroyed. Okay? Ogun is also the father of orphans. So,
like those women. Oh,
like the women and the forsaken. Yes. Okay? It's also the father of orphans.
Wow,
you know, that's so beyond the seven erected poles, okay, that were later removed, that had to be removed later and used and returned, okay, there are other poles because the women on stage were more than seven.
So how many
and all of I can't particularly remember
over 30 can, because no, the cast yeah, the cast for A Dance of the Forest, I think they were well over.
Yeah, I want
like no. Oh, yeah. I'm just trying to, because I've seen some of the plays that you directed. Like you said, there's this very ambitious, very very huge. Sometimes we wonder how is he able to manage all of this track. I'll give you an example. When Oshafison adapted Ogbojo Ode.
Okay.
Now I saw Ogbojo Ode. I saw Ireke Onibodu.
Ireke Onibodu.
And if you look at that. I mean, we're talking about over 100.
Yeah, that's true.
Actors,
yeah,
dancers, actors.
Yeah.
So I also try to imagine the way you would have done the Women of Owu in a way, in the context of having to bring together women, people that the audience will have a sense of a kingdom.
Exactly.
So
I'm
just trying to.
Yes, be able to agree with you. On this particular occasion, I did not have the. Of course, again, one has to think about the availability of funds
to be able to do that.
Okay, to be able to bring together so many.
But the number the symbol is the pillars.
Yes,
seven
is a pillar.
To link
and then the women that I worked with, the entire women couldn't have been more than about 20, 22.
Okay.
You know, between 2025 or thereabouts.
Oh, thereabouts.
That's number of women that we have in state. But then there is a way by which a director can have recourse to movement. You know through ooh, the technical facility of movement, of mime, of dance, you can even make just five people to have the semblance of a whole kingdom. You know, it depends, you know, on the approach, okay, to dance and to movement and how you manipulate them, okay, that's those on stage and so on.
Okay. So, did you allocate time differently for, let's say, when they will have the dance rehearsal, when they will have the music rehearsal, then the acting, or everything was moving at the same time?
The first thing I do, you know, when I am directing a play, when I'm directing an African play, because you see, an African play is a complex, usually an African play, a play written in the context of the typical African performance, okay, that we refer to as total theater, okay, is treated by me as a community. The community of the arts. I treat it as a community of the arts. And so whenever I'm handling such a play, I relate with that particular drama, you know, as a community of the arts. And henceforth, okay, everybody participating is a member of that community. Okay? And a community of the arts in the sense that you have all art forms that you are working with. Okay, and then you must, and each of the art form must excel. Okay, within that particular context. Okay, must excel. And so once I grab a script and I'm directing a script, and then I'm reading. I lay emphasis, so much emphasis on reading, because I want. Reading. Because I want all the members of cast to get the rhythm of the play through reading. So a lot would have been done even before I begin to block
the movement
on stage. And so once I read, and then I begin to sense that the cast are beginning to respond to what they are reading, I then begin to teach the songs.
So it's a process. Aha,
yeah.
Layers.
Okay, you
process.
Get it. Yeah. So by the time I'm beginning to treat, okay, the songs, okay, you are also then upping, okay, you are keying them further into the rhythm of the play. Once that's done successfully, I had them over to the choreographer. Okay, to start.
So
to
what
start
it means is that after the casting, and then you bring them together to read, as they are reading, you first try to, what is the word now? Try to find the rhythm.
Yeah. How they respond to the there's always a rhythm in the text.
Yes.
There is a textual rhythm.
Yes.
There is always a textual rhythm. Okay. Now, the process of reading also has a way of eliciting that rhythm, okay, and making the cast to understand that rhythm and keying them into the rhythm. And then by the time we then begin to insert the songs, and then we begin to, okay, to teach the songs, okay, now beyond reading, okay, they have another element assisting their understanding of the rhythm and keying forward, and being keyed further into the rhythm of the play. Okay, and so by the time all that's concluded, okay, and then I hand them over to the choreographer. Okay,
you would have done
yes.
So what the choreographer does eventually is just to add a little tips here and there.
And then link everything together.
So it means that choreography, the directing itself begins from the reading.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It begins from the reading.
Because along the line,
yeah,
if you find that maybe one or two actors seem not to be flowing along for whatever reason. How do you resolve that?
I do a lot of explanation. Fortunately or unfortunately, being a teacher, I think that my standpoint whenever I direct a play is to turn the arena is to turn my working environment into a classroom. It's an extension of the classroom anyway. It's an extension of the classroom, and then also that's then carried on even to the performance of the play, because you now have even a bigger extension of the classroom in the audience area and so on and so forth. And so you are just using, and then when you are dealing also with plays like this, and such plays written by Soyinka Akada, people think are so difficult and so on and so forth. What I want to achieve with them is to break them down, such an extent that everybody who comes in as audience would understand. So, and there is no way I can break a play down for the audience if I don't break for the performance.
That's interesting. Now, in the course of your rehearsal and the process of putting it together, was there any point that you needed the playwright to come in to, rub minds with?
Unfortunately, the playwright was not even around. He was outside of the country in this particular context. Some deviation to a very great degree in terms of how myself and Professor Shofison work together. Yes.
I know you've collaborated so many times.
When he gives me a script to take a look at, and then I take a look at lines, at scenes, at situations, make recommendations, tell him about my feelings, blah, blah, blah. And some you go ahead and rewrite and make provision for alternative scenes and songs and so on. But on this particular occasion, he wasn't even around. I think he was away to Germany or something. And so it was performed. And so that 2011 performance, he did not watch it. He did not see this performance, my version of the play, until 2016 actually.
The one he mentioned to me yesterday.
It was the 2016 performance.
Because it was really so, he kept going back to talking about it.
And it's that 2016 performance I'm not really enthusiastic.
Enthralled by the kind of work that you did on the work. So on a final note, because I know you want to do some other things, can we now say that tragedy, generally speaking, reflect the kind of society that we are in, or that tragedy can perhaps be said to be the most important of those joys in a way of trying to really pin our consciousness down about the way we even relate with ourselves?
Universally, tragedy as you said, it's a form that has actually assisted us in defining our humanity. It also has sharpened our responses, as existential beings. And so when an African writer of tragedy then writes, such as these people that we're talking about, the Oshobo Sons and Jake, even Emi Zize, and the writers with the African idea of the projection of the African being, you find them, they seem to always be conscious of that fact. That tragedy is a dramatic instrument or form that has the capacity to define us as community, and it keeps on redefining and redefining us as community. So you always find, of course, and I think also that it's been one of the most successful dramatic forms ever invented. Okay, because it has all the components, okay, to talk about our faults, about our successes, our victories, our triumphs, and so on and so forth. And then also at the heart, and that's something that I have discovered, at the heart of every tragedy, however dark, is a sense of celebration of the humanity in us. However,
how did you realize that in Women of Oru? At the point Alugba comes, puts more curse on
on the people,
and then we see these women, having that the ritual that you talk about. How are you able to realize this point that you're talking about? What is that thing that we also need to celebrate in that? If these people are actually going to expect more.
You know the mask, okay, is a method, okay, of reenactment of being, okay, the mask. Now, the mask making Alugba to come in as mask, okay, works in some ways for me. One, he states his return as an ancestor, so he's a personification of the ancestral world. Of the ancestors, of the world of the dead. That's one. And then two, he also then comes to establish that even in spite of the fact that he comes laden with causes for the land and so on and so forth, okay, he also, his presence also establishes, okay, that sense of continuity, okay, of the land of the living, even though you have come to call them, okay, they are still always linked to the world of the ancestors. Though you have come from the world of the ancestors to come and lay curses and pronounce apocalyptic things on them, okay, the fact of the matter of the matter is that the world from which you have come, okay, is the continuity of this world. And so whatever I suffered here, okay, will be inherited and then continued in that world.
That's really profound. So in spite of the tragedy, there's that...
sense of celebration.
Wow, that's really amazing. So can we take that as a point of contact between the old world, the Greek world, and the contemporary African times of reimagination? I want to take away from this is the fact that while it seems that we've left the past, it seems that the past is not done with us.
There's no way it can be done with us. Mm-hmm. Because ideas, concepts, even fashion, okay, are just mere replications of
what has been
past inventions. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that's the reason, for instance, we cannot break away totally, okay, from past inventions. We can only improve. We can only seek use. The past, let's see the past as a divination tree.
Your 0.5 itself.
Let's see the past as a divination tree, okay, via which humanity then seeks to define, okay, the meaning of the present, and find solution, okay, to the problems of our present, okay, and then we can then also seek future interpretations and meanings of the for the future. I think that's just the way tragedy is, and that's the reason that any typical tragedy, okay, that works in any community in any part of the world is likely to work in another part of the world, because it's a universal form is a universal language. It's a universal experience.
Thank you so very much, sir.
Thank you
so much for your time.